funding for school districts in Wisconsin. It's been a hot-button political issue for decades, and it's been exacerbated in recent years by declining enrollment and now the pandemic. So some Wisconsin school districts have turned to private sponsorships and naming rights to help pay for athletic facilities and programs. Perhaps you've seen them. While others have received charitable donations that help fund capital projects for academics. Perhaps you've heard about them. It raises some ethical questions about whether private businesses should be allowed to have their branding advertised on public school facilities, or if it's a harmless way to provide more funding at a time when schools are looking for just that. Be interested in knowing and hearing from you. Our guest today researches school funding in Wisconsin and the challenges our system faces. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234. Do you see a problem with private businesses sponsoring public school, field, gym, or pavilions? What kind of restrictions do you think there should be over private sponsorships at schools across Wisconsin? Got a couple comments up on Facebook on our Ideas Network Facebook page that we'll get to, and you can always comment there or call us now at 1-800-642-1234. Andrew Rushofsky is a professor emeritus of public affairs and applied economics at the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Andrew, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's start with some basics. I know this is a complicated formula, or there are complicated formulas, plural, but to give us an overview of funding for public schools in Wisconsin, you're the expert. How does it look from 10,000 feet up?
Well, I might start by saying that I and many people who look at school funding in Wisconsin think that the system is broken, doesn't work well. And basically, we fund schools with a mixture of local property tax revenues and revenues from state aid and a little bit of federal revenues. And one thing that characterizes Wisconsin's school funding system that you don't find, I think, in any other state is that the state has imposed a revenue limit on schools. And it's a revenue limit that is the sum of what is called general state aid, most of 80% of total state funding for schools, plus property tax revenues. And this was instituted in 1994. And in the first decade or so, the amount that districts could raise, and that's effectively spend, went up by about the rate of inflation. But in the last decade or so, that annual adjustment, as it's called, has, in one case, it went as negative, and in recent years, including the current budget, it is absolutely zero. So that means that any increase in state aid has to be offset with a reduction in property taxes. And the bottom line is that schools end up with no extra revenue, despite the fact that the costs of education continue to rise.
Andrew, some school districts now have turned to naming rights sponsorships from private businesses to help fund their athletics facilities. How recent of a phenomenon is this?
I'm not exactly sure, but I think this kind of phenomenon has been going on in various states for a number of years. Schools across the country facing constraints in terms of public funding have looked for donations from individuals, donations from businesses, voluntary contributions. And that's been going on, I think, for decades. And maybe there's an upsurge now in naming rights, but I'm not actually sure.
An article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel recently detailing some of the naming rights that have been sold off in Wisconsin schools across the state. And Andrew, what sort of regulations do we see on these sort of naming rights and sponsorships at public schools?
That's a good question, and I don't really know the answer. It's obviously the answer is different in Wisconsin and in other states. As far as I know, there are not any state regulations for local districts to decide to give naming rights as a way of generating revenue.
Do we know what sort of revenue it generates? Are there big dollars behind these names?
As far as I know, the state does not collect data on naming right revenue. They do collect data on revenue that districts generate from selling ticket sales and miscellaneous sources of revenue. And on the whole, those miscellaneous revenues across the whole state and across all school districts account for a few percent at most of total revenues of school districts. So it's not an important source of funding in the broader picture, although for an individual district that's struggling to educate mm-hmm. its children, being able to improve facilities by gaining some revenue or a naming right for an existing facility, which then allows that revenue to be used for general education, even if it's a small amount relative to the total budget of schools, it can make a big difference.
Andrew Rashofsky is a professor emeritus of public affairs and applied economics at the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs in UW-Madison, looking at alternatives to funding sources for schools across Wisconsin and the rise in reports of naming rights and sponsorships we've seen at Wisconsin schools, and whether or not it's something you would support at your local school at 1-800-642-1234. And we have a comment here, as mentioned before, on Facebook. Paul writes on our Facebook page, our Ideas Network Facebook page, "I think it shows clearly our tax policies are wildly out of whack. We shouldn't be depending upon corporate charity to provide services guaranteed by the state's constitution. Any company with enough profit to buy a community a school should be paying more in taxes so working families don't have to carry that whole burden." Andrew, what's your reaction to Paul's thought on this?
I think I generally agree with Paul that states have a responsibility, and the foundation of that is in the state constitution. There's an education clause, and across the country, in fact, courts, not in Wisconsin, have argued that states are responsible for providing what generally is called an adequate education for all their students. And arguably, that's not happening in Wisconsin. And that doesn't prevent some school districts from saying if they want to have an extra fancy sports facilities to look for private funding. But it is worrisome when school districts are forced to go after private corporate funding as just a way of maintaining basic education.
Lynn from our Facebook page said, "If businesses want to support a school project with a donation, that's great, but we don't need to give them a permanent advertising by putting their names on buildings or fields. A brass plaque should be sufficient." And I guess that would go to the heart of what individual districts decide what works for themselves when it comes to sponsorship or naming rights in these schools, Andrew.
I think it's a decision that we should allow local school districts to make. It's unfortunate they're in a situation where they are desperate for revenue, but if a donor comes and is willing to contribute substantial amount of money, and the price for that is putting their name on some facility, whether it's a plaque or a big sign, that's given the circumstances, that's probably all right.
So another comment from our Facebook page as they come in, the Ideas Network Facebook page, a little lively this afternoon with our Central Time topic, also calls at 1-800-642-1234. Here's what Joan had to say. "We've had two insurance companies donate to update or build new portions of the high school. Other than their names over the door, we've not seen any or heard any undue influence. This was a win for the taxpayers." And, you know, when you talk about the imposed revenue limit on schools that came down in Wisconsin in 1994, that was supposed to be a win for the taxpayers, too. Are the taxpayers being protected through this in some way, Andrew, as you see it?
I think basically no. And let me try to explain why not. The way the revenue limit works is there's a limit on total general aid and property tax revenue. So the state, as it did in the current budget that we're living through now, the biennial budget, it increased general aid, but it didn't change at all the revenue limit. And that forces districts to cut their property tax levy. But how do they do that? The only way they can do that is by lowering the rate. And think about what that does. Lowering the rate means that you pay somewhat lower property taxes, but every owner of property within the school district also pays lower property tax. And that includes owners of vacation property who don't live in the state. It includes businesses. They could be a business that's incorporated in Europe, foreign businesses or in other states. We spread out property tax relief. The term that I use is untargeted. It goes to absolutely every owner of property. And the larger the value of your property, the larger the tax break you get. As a net result, the proportion of property tax breaks that goes to homeowners, particularly to homeowners who face a high burden, pay a lot of taxes relative to their income, presume taxpayers that we might as a state want to assist, get a fairly small share of the total tax break that's effectively mandated through revenue caps. So it's not a very successful way of giving property tax relief. And we've been following this approach for years. And in the end, you might think that, property tax revenues in Wisconsin must be lower than the national average. But in fact, they're still above the national average, although they've come down.
We're talking to UW Madison Professor Emeritus Andrew Rushofsky about school district funding in Wisconsin and the role of donations and sponsorships. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-123. Had a couple of comments on our Ideas Network Facebook page where you can join the debate there. Do you think private business sponsorships should be treated differently than donations to school districts? And would you be okay with more advertising and naming rights if it reduced the need for a referendum every year? Do you have any ethical concerns about businesses putting their names on public school facilities? And do you think students care? 1-800-642-1234. Number to join our conversation with Andrew Rushofsky is 1-800-642-1234. Conversation continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn and for Rob Ferret today, and we're picking up the conversation with Andrew Rushofsky, Public Affairs Professor and Emeritus from UW-Madison, on how Wisconsin can fund schools, how Wisconsin does fund schools, and how Wisconsin should fund schools. And we're interested in hearing from you still before our time is up at 1-800-642-1234. What kind of changes would you like to see for school funding in Wisconsin? As we continue here, Andrew, I do want to ask about referenda, which for school districts, it comes around quite often, and it is a call for extra additional funding from school districts that can't find it, as in part as a result of the imposed revenue limits on schools. It dates back to 1994. What do you, in terms of school funding, how do you view referenda?
Well, referenda are a way of, and really the only way, for school districts and citizens within school districts to override the revenue limit, to say, okay, we are willing to pay higher property taxes to increase spending on our schools. And process has existed since 1994. And one interesting thing are that the proportion of districts that are going to referenda has been increasing, and the proportion of successful referenda has increased over time. And I think that reflects the desperation that so many districts face in how do we provide education for our children. In some cases, they face rising costs, but they are unable to spend more money, not even adjustments for inflation. And in some sense, thank goodness for having referenda. At least it allows some districts to spend more money. But the evidence shows it's much easier for districts that are relatively small, often high-income districts, to enact and successfully pass referenda than big districts with substantial amounts of low-income and diverse populations. And so over time, it counteracts the effort of state aid to equalize funding and provides more inequalities in the funding of education within a state.
And as we've been talking about school funding here, I would be remiss if we did not bring up private schools and how they factor into the complications of funding formulas for education in Wisconsin. So, Andrew, do private schools have the same types of restrictions for outside funding as part of the Wisconsin Department of Instruction? Or would they, in theory, be allowed to, sell sponsorships, take donations for anything?
As far as I know, private schools are not subject to any constraints and restraint on their ability to raise revenue. And if you like at universities also, you go around and buildings have people's names, names of donors. Classrooms have names. And so the reliance on private donations from individuals and from businesses in the private sector is even greater than the public sector.
One example in Beloit, Diane Hendricks and other business leaders there formed a nonprofit organization, Kids First Beloit, that then funded a new public charter school called the Lincoln Academy to compete with the school district of Beloit. So with that in mind, Andrew, what kind of ways are there for private citizens and organizations to work around some of these school funding challenges that we've been seeing?
I mean, in part, one might argue that if you care about the funding, if you care about public education in Wisconsin, and you want to improve the funding of, and the equity in funding of public education, one, as a private citizen, ought to be lobbying our legislature to try to fix what is essentially a broken system. Failing that, if you don't think that your school district or your children or your neighbor's children go to school have enough resources, I think people can try to donate, try to help out.
Why work to
fix? Is that going to make a big difference? Yeah. Probably not.
Well, why you talk about, and you know, we started with how the funding formula is, and your as from your research is broken for Wisconsin education, and it needs to be fixed. But what about the argument that you know, maybe starting from scratch or starting from a different place altogether? I mean, what do you see in your studies, Andrew, that would work going forward? Where do we begin to find some equity here, and where do we begin to find a way to pay for the future of Wisconsin?
So I talked about, and we've been discussing, the revenue limits, which place an incredible constraint on school districts. And the pattern of spending that we saw in 1994 has sort of been frozen over time, more or less. And we've frozen in inequity. So that's one issue. But the other issue is that the way that we distribute state aid, called general aid equalization formula. Our formula in Wisconsin takes account to a good degree of the property wealth of different districts, but it pays almost no attention to the fact that some districts have to spend more money to educate their kids than other districts. And that reflects, on the one hand, small rural districts where have few students but still have to provide a whole array of education. And on the other hand, that different compositions of student bodies generate different costs. So a school district that has lots of students who don't come to school speaking English and lots of students from low-income families have to spend a lot more money to achieve any educational standard than a district that has middle and upper middle class students who come to school already prepared, whose parents can buy them computers and school supplies and so forth. And our formula takes almost no account of differences in poverty, for instance. And that's in striking contrast to most other states, which have used various means, including weighted pupils. So if you have students from low-income families, they count as, let's say, a student and a half, giving more state aid to those districts that have concentrations of what we might call high-need students. And we don't do that in Wisconsin.
Andrew Roshofsky is a professor emeritus of public affairs and applied economics at the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Let's go to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234, where Ben in La Crosse is standing by. Ben, good afternoon. You're on Central Time.
Hi. Couple of points. One of them is prior to the 1994 change in the legislation, school boards could enact whatever taxes they wanted on their districts. And we had a situation where property taxes, the school portion of property taxes was going up 10% or more per year, year over year. It was a problem that legislation was designed to solve. Secondly, the issue of who pays the property taxes is because the situation is inequitable because residential property owners wind up paying approximately 75% of all property taxes in the state because special interests have lobbied to get their property tax burden reduced. Thirdly, it's a situation where as enrollment goes up, the costs go up for education in a school district. But apparently, as enrollment goes down, which is what's happening throughout the state, costs continue to go up.
Ben, we're short on time, and I appreciate the 3 points, but I want to give enough time for Andrew to respond. Andrew?
Those are complicated issues. Just let me say that they are ways to limit and constrain growth in property tax revenue that are not as draconian as our current revenue limits that have lots of unintended consequences.
Do you see any momentum for funding changes on education in Wisconsin, Andrew?
I hope so. I think what's happening over time is that more people around the state, and this is rich districts, poor districts, conservative and liberal political areas, are all saying, wait a minute, we don't have enough funding for our schools. And this is becoming a crisis across the state in all sorts of districts. And that's probably a prerequisite for the political momentum to think about reform.
Andrew, really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure.
Andrew Ruschowski, Professor Emeritus of Public Affairs and Applied Economics at the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. With us today to look at how we fund our schools and how that may change or stay the same.